All right, after a brief lunch break, we are now resuming our board meeting. Annette Brinkman has been with us this morning discussing our next steps for hiring our superintendent. And now we're going to continue on with our agenda, which is working on our master boards. The first thing we're going to do is have a discussion on the book that we all read, which is The Smartest Kids in the World, followed by we're going to log into master boards and kind of review what we still need to do or what we can accomplish with that. So let's start off with The Smartest Kids in the World book discussion.
Most important person is the teacher.
Except possibly the parent.
Not the parent if you don't have the teacher. Yeah.
Like, you know, big pick.
Right.
Well, but not just teachers. Teachers who are well-trained and experienced.
Right.
They spent their money on training teachers first.
Yeah.
And then once they were trained, then they were able to let those people have a great deal of autonomy, not as much supervision or management of the teacher, because they were so well trained and worked so well together that they didn't need to worry about having professional learning communities, because that's what they did automatically, because they just wanted to share ideas.
But one thing that comes out of it too, on exactly what you're saying, is that supports all of the other research when we talk about like teacher salaries and this veins and changes and whatever, is that there is just the degree itself, having a master's doesn't guarantee anything. Having a doctorate doesn't guarantee anything. Having 12 years experience doesn't guarantee anything. It is, like you say, it's well trained, and it's like, you know, within that first 7 years, you either get it or you're kind of stagnant.
Well, and what's interesting in this book, it's not just first 7 years, it's who gets into teaching colleges. And one thing I thought was interesting is comparing when I was in secondary education at USU, when anybody who wanted to be in education, and now my daughter-in-law went through such a rigorous screening to get into elementary ed.
Yeah.
Secondary ed is somewhat following, but not as rigorous as elementary ed, because USU is now perceived as a better teaching college, especially for elementary ed. And I think that's, it said, fewer colleges putting out teachers, and that the rigor, that's the other word we hear a lot, the rigor for those teachers, if we have teachers who have a rigorous education, they're more likely to provide a rigorous education.
Right. But it's the teacher, the rigor,
and the practicum. Notice what they did was practicum. Mm-hmm. They went in and taught under supervision with a mentor.
Right.
And then they had opportunities for interaction together.
And it was with a teacher who was, through some measure, I don't know what measures are used, okay, but it's like an accurate measure that the teacher is actually doing what they're supposed to do. Differentiated instruction, differentiated assessment, you know, their lesson plans, all of those things, the connection with students, and their ability, you know, to accurately measure what that teacher really does. Just like we have to be accurate and measure what that student can do. And the word is accurate.
I thought it was interesting in there talking about how we as Americans focus so much on athletics. It was, you know, and I, mm-hmm. you know, I never hit me like it did as I started reading it. And you start thinking, well, what do we do? Our kids, the first thing, you get them in every kind of sport there is. And then when they get along so much, what do? Then you got to get them in these super leagues and everything else. And you, when I started thinking about that, man, you stop and think about how much not only financial means, but the time that you're putting that and focusing on athletics. And it is, you know, and I'm not saying you go in and eliminate athletics out of the schools, But I'm telling you, it was an eye-opening experience as I read that. And then I started thinking about, you know, when I first read it, then I sit and pondered it for a bit. And I thought, you know, we do focus as Americans.
Well, none of those other countries have athletics built into the curriculum.
No, they have clubs. Yeah, they have clubs. But that was, it was a separate, yeah, they had a different organization. It was not part of
But they don't have arts either. And so as we were listing our priorities, what makes our district, and I think, I thought very seriously about this. I think we said students feel a part of the school, that we engage students, we help them find their passion. I don't know about you, but my husband found his passion for school through football.
Okay.
Through football. I found my passion through music programs, cheerleading, debate. You know, what made me love school was not necessarily, and these kids, the difference with our kids go to school because they like going to school. These other countries seem to be going to school so I can get a good job. That's all. I'm in school to get a good job.
They also go to school so they can go to school more, because otherwise there is somebody who makes that decision.
So would we change it?
Well, I think, you know, when you're talking about sports, because high school in Finland and Poland had a purpose, just like high school football in America. There was a big, important contest at the end, and the score counted. And some of that, like I said, you know, yeah, I think we need to change somewhat, but the South Koreans, we don't want that.
No.
I don't think anybody wants that for their kids.
No.
I mean, the cops are going around busting people for studying too late. The
yeah.
kids are sleeping yeah. too loud. And then they waste like 2 or 3 years
and their regular
just
school
sleeping,
is not
and then
regular.
Finally when it starts to matter,
then they
jump in and they try to cram it all in. And that's what I'm thinking. No, we want the curriculum and you know, testing and all that to align so that they're motivated to move forward in increments throughout the whole process, rather than here's this big test at the end, and you know, we'll just sleep through and not worry about anything. And then when it counts the last 2 years, we'll count ourselves.
Or that you have to go elsewhere and not the public school for good education.
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, it was more of an indictment of the South Korean public school system and how wonderful these other systems were. And you think, okay, why aren't those teachers teaching in the public school, and why
is there not being
there's not enough
those parents
well,
pay them, you know, to get that PSI school.
The pressure on the kids. They do better on tests when you put that intense pressure, but they're killing themselves. I mean, they're
literally
suicide, but they're also just, I mean, you know, and then they think they're a loser for the rest of their life if they don't pass the test and get into college. I think you want everybody in your society to feel competent and. I mean,
that's totally different than those other countries, too, though. Other countries don't tell everybody they're worthwhile and everybody can go to college.
It's a different climate. I mean, it really is a different societal norms than anything else. I mean, they're used to just, you know, this you work and you do this. But it was interesting to me. These parents were working hard and they're putting so much money into paying for tutors and everything else.
Yeah.
The chance that their kids would kind of win the lottery and pass the test, it was just, I don't know, it's completely dysfunctional to me.
You know,
pass the test, go ahead, sir.
I've never done so.
Okay.
But it's like some of the schools that are not mentioned in there that I think that we all know, it's like, say, in Germany, your fifth or sixth grade teacher, I mean, which is determines whether or not you continue on or what kind of school you go on to afterwards. What was I going with that? Okay. The thing is, okay, when you talk about those test scores, the only problem is that when they make all these reports is that here we are, this great industrialized nation, and we put all this money into education, and yet you get this little tiny place over here in Korea, and they get scores like this, and we get scores like this. And then so the federal government, even in our state governments, then criticize everything we do because we're not getting those scores. And so it's like, what do you want? well, why should we put more money into education? Because we give you the money, and yet those Korean people do it. And look what they get. They get those scores and well, those Finland. And
you could look at the same thing, I think, with you know, basketball versus soccer. You know, America does really well in soccer and basketball, because that's our sport and everybody yeah. gets you know, behind it and those kind of things. And so the ones that rise to the top, the NBA, it's a much tougher situation. It's the same thing with soccer the rest of the world. America usually doesn't do as well, but it's not a sport that most of us really care about. And so, again, the test is just one dynamic, and there are certain, like Korea and Finland, that you know, that's all important. And so, yeah, they're going to, but they're not well-rounded. They're not, to me, whole and complete individuals, which is what we want our kids to be.
Can I have a question for you educators and you people who know statistics, that they only test a sampling, and they say that we over-test by testing every child, but I remember this year when people could opt out of end-of-level tests, and they said that really affects your end scores, because so, as someone who studies statistics and probability and all of that, Jim, will you explain to me how testing less than 15% of a population, and that's one of the things we always look at with NAEP scores, NAEP doesn't test every kid, it never has, how are they accurate, is my question.
It has to do with who you sample. If I take a small sample and test everybody in that sample, then statistically that will be an average group. But I don't have to test everybody.
Right.
I just have to make sure then I have a large enough sample that measures everybody in that sample from the very lowest to the very highest.
It has to be a random
sample that is replicable as I did everybody else.
And what I heard, though, that it's not random, when I went to one class at National, they want a child from this socioeconomic background, they want a child from this, and this, and this, and this,
well,
and this.
Well, that's an attempt to try to make it normalized.
And they're all 15-year-olds, and they can't be too young or too old.
No.
And so anyway, I thought, okay, from what I know about statistics, it, so it's more like, so then there's a plus or a minus with it, because it is not every person in the United States, how are you going to vote?
No, it depends on the kind of sample I want. If I want one that's representative, then I go through and I say, here's the census of the United States, and there are these many black, and these many Hispanic, and Chinese, etc. And I select out, I'm going to find exactly that proportion of my sample, usually 100. Take 100 people and say, I've got, in that 100, I've got 26% black, 15%.
250-year-olds.
Whatever. Yeah. And they're all going to be at this same economic background, and so I say this really is for this life, this represents that group, and I can say they represent it. But if I want a whole population, then I've got to say, well, then I got to sample each of the groups. And again, how depends how fine you cut the pie. I'm going to take all 2-year-olds, that means 2 plus 2.5, so is that 2 to 3? Is that, what do you think? Do I have to do the months? So it all depends on how you want to sample. So statistics can be anything you want it to be.
I know.
It's just that you don't know that you're always comparing apples to apples.
But it's like just all the standardized testing. It's just done on, you know, they'll say what kind of a sample and then it's done on. But like I know, it's like with behavior, I could go into a classroom and watch a student every single day for 2 weeks. But I could also go into the classroom twice a week, and I statistically will get the same data, probe data, which is what that is.
It depends on how you do it. So statistics are what they are. They're not perfect.
Statistics don't lie, but liars can use statistics.
So I just thought that was really interesting, and as they talked about it in the class I went to, talking about how they're using this test, and they're comparing kids who've taken this test in this school to this school. But what's interesting, 15-year-olds, which school are you really comparing? And so anyway, I find the whole premise in some ways quite interesting, that we're testing 15-year-olds rather than, I think of my own children, the difference in my 15-year-old son, who always so obnoxious, to my 18-year-old son. So anyway, that I find a fascinating thing about it. I still think all the data is very accurate, but it's a different paradigm.
Well, it's accurate for that slice.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say it's necessarily accurate for the 16-year-old and the 17-year-old, but it's saying I'll take everybody across the world or that age and compare them, at least have a way of comparing. And say, well, these kids from this population don't do the same as kids in this population. Particularly when it comes to this kind of unusual test, which gets at thinking and not just memorization.
I remember, Jim, at Logan and I one time, a long, long time ago, when I tell you what principal or counselors were involved, what happened is that everyone was supposed to be tested. And so you have a list of all of the kids who missed out on being tested that day. And so what happens is that they go through and look at their grade point averages. And the higher the grade point average, the more effort that was put into getting that student in to make up that test. Absolutely. So,
great, you fill the statistics off and make them better.
That's right.
Of course, you could change your grade.
And the government's always trying to say, we're going to make this so it's perfectly the same for everybody, but it's never the same. I thought it was interesting to hear that they weren't concerned about class size.
No, never.
Then that didn't make any difference.
No, yeah, that was intriguing. It was It was the teacher that made the difference. You know, and I think all of us have had teachers who has inspired and lifted you and made you want. But I think we all know, on the other hand, a group that it was about. Why did I even go there?
Yeah.
I think that's, to me, what I got out of. If you don't have a highly effective teacher,
you're going to lose.
Yeah, that's the whole thing that I got out of this. Is,
well, the other thing I got was well-paid
teachers. Yeah, and the thing is, it says, you know, like in there, where a lot that we mass-produce teachers so much, and I got thinking, you know, every time we have an opening, how many applications do we get?
Luckily, we can choose.
You can choose, and how many? I know down when I was still working, it blew me away how many kids were down checking and doing things who had a teaching degree, and they couldn't get employment.
If you look at the marketplace, then you would say, okay, like when we advertise for a business administrator. And say, how many applications do you get and that are qualified? And it's like this. And if you advertise for a high school English teacher, you will get a stack this big, they're all qualified. And so, you know, when teachers talk about pay, the marketplace is, well, if you don't want that pay, there's somebody else that does. Whereas with the business administrator, because the business administrator, and excuse me for saying this, but I was really impressed with you, is that when you said, you know, when an offer gets made and you go, well, can you go here? And I thought, you know, the marketplace, you know? But if I'm an English teacher and I say, you say, here's your salary, here's your step, and I go, well, could you go two more? The answer will probably be, oh, no, somebody right behind you will take it for less even. So that's a problem I think that we have.
Well, it is. You know, once you brought up class sizing and stuff, I guess that begs the question, would we be better off increasing class sizes and raising the teacher pay to the point that, you know, it really attracts people who, I think the general perception has been that's a lower paying situation, and so you get a lot of other people that go other directions. And, you know, see, it was interesting because the LDS Church, with their seminary teachers, they used to make less than school teachers. And finally somebody came to them and they said, look, if you want to track the cream of the crop, then you raise your salary above the teachers in the
and
public school system.
And increase your rigor for what they've got to do.
Yeah, but you'll attract that. And you'll attract, you know, people that are looking at more because, you know, at least when I was in school, our seminary teacher, I mean, the impression for all the kids was he makes less and it's kind of a sacrifice that he does this job. Whereas with, you know, now they make more, and it's increased that. So that's why, you know, I guess to me it begs the question, would we be better off to say, let's bump the salary up quite a bit, let them teach a lot more kids in the classroom. If it's a, that inspiring, you know, powerful individual that we want, is it, or is that better off, you know?
Which is,
it sounds like it could be.
I think they could do either or, but I think the problem is where you get into large class sizes with low pay.
Yeah,
I think they can take small class sizes and low pay, or high salary and high class sizes, but not and high class sizes and low pay.
And don't you find that as you look back on your experience with teachers, whether it's your own or your children's, the good teachers had rigor? Now, there were the teachers that everybody liked, but that the teachers who, after graduation, the kids said, wow, those teachers had rigor, whether it was required in the school system or not. They had rigor.
I'm just going to run this one out. Just run down.
Well, it's interesting to me that just with my own children, and my daughter and I had this long conversation just yesterday about one of her classes, and how every day when she went the entire year, every day she went to the class, here's your worksheet. Mm-hmm. Every day, here's your worksheet. This current year we just had. Every day, here's
were
your
they
worksheet.
Ditto?
Okay. Yeah, they were ditto. And I said, she's like, I am so glad to be done with that. She's like, and she did well. She passed. But she missed out on an A. She got an A minus because she didn't do her worksheets while we were gone to Disneyland. She did them when we got back, but since she didn't do them in class, she got dot points. And I said, so what does it matter if you do your worksheets after class or during class? And she's like, less points. So it's interesting that, to me, that rigor in the eye of the teacher is different than the eye of the student.
The teacher who's doing the handouts copying out, they're not teaching.
But do you think they think that they have
rigor? No.
Yeah. And a good evaluator.
They know they're doing the least they have to do to get the pay they think they're getting. I'm getting paid low salary, okay. I'm going to do low work. And these kids can just learn what they need to learn from the worksheet. And after all, I did mimeograph this in 1959, and it still works.
Christy, I have to evaluate our teachers at INTEC on differentiated instruction and differentiated assessment. And what is interesting is that there is a teacher who is in their third year who has the most differentiated instruction I have seen in almost my whole career. Even at her third year, there are so many different ways for her to give out that information. And it's the same thing with the assessment. So many different ways for her to check this for knowledge from kids. And then, but she's also able to do what's called targeted instruction and targeted assessment for a certain group or for a certain student. But it's supposed to be differentiated instruction goes out for everybody. And then there is a teacher who is retired and back, and I have to mark the person as emerging because the worksheet. The same worksheet over and over again, the same math problems over and over again, and it's the same.
To every student in the class.
Every student in the class, that's right. As whereas I watch this one teacher, and you watch the connection, the work that she gets out of those kids because of all the different ways that she does it. And you have this student who has a learning disability and written expression, who writing a two-page essay is really hard for him. He works his butt off for her. You know, he does.
You know, one thing that I've always felt strongly about is when I first got on the board, that's been back when if you filled out an evaluation or the evaluation you received was a good evaluation, you got X amount of dollars at the end of the year.
Oh yeah, career ladder.
Mm-hmm. Career ladder. There you go. And I remember the individuals who were marked down a little, and they would come in absolutely furious because I don't get this pot of money. Okay. Consequently, what I seen happening at the end of the year, principals, I don't want you in my face.
That's right.
So, Connie Morgan, good, 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 good. So you're happy, so you get this pot of money. To me, the responsibility of having effective, very good teachers is the result of a principal and his honest, truthful evaluations. Because if you're not, if you're letting a teacher just slide year after year after year, you're doing a disservice to those, to the young men and young women you're teaching. And it has to be, you know, the evaluation has to be honest. I mean, I know at different times, for the different companies that I work with, we had to sit down and get an evaluation. And I work with them every day, right to the side of them. And I can remember when I first started, and it was difficult to give an honest evaluation because they're your friends, you know. But I know, and then, so then what happened is the pressure seemed to be on me all the time to turn out product, if you will, then. And when I finally started doing an honest, straightforward evaluation, listing their positive things, the weak things that they needed to work on, productivity just
A year from now, if we're not happy with some of what Jeff does and we don't tell him,
then he has
to work.
He can't be successful if we don't let him know.
You have your evaluation that you got on your Diet Coke, so you might as well take us away.
But you know, to me, that comes down to the crux. A lot of the crux of the problem, because if you have a teacher who needs improvement in this, then you need to figure out a plan as a principal to me that this is the standard we need you to be. And you're right here, and in order to get here, these are the things I want you
to work on. But I think it goes back to communication and relationships.
Oh.
Because once, if you don't have those established, then regardless of what comes out in that evaluation, it's either going to be whatever, or it's going to be definitely.
Well, I can tell you a perfect thing. If I was a teacher down at, and I'm just picking this one, if I was a teacher down here at Ellis, and Sue come in and told me, this is what you need to do, no questions asked.
Well, partly because she's going to show you data. She's going to have data. She's going to have gone
through. She has a relationship with those.
It's
the whole thing. They trust her. She trusts them. And so when she sits down, they're not going to take it in a manner in which you're picking on me or you're doing this. They know that she is there trying to help them become an effective thing.
Data. And it's like what gets measured gets taken care of.
Yeah, but you can show data. And in a very, you can say, here's the data, you know, you're a crappy teacher, you know, this is what you need. But if you have a relationship, it goes back to the relationship that you have to have.
But you know, if somebody that's nice to you and we have a very good relationship, and I say to you that, you know, you need to do such and such and such and such, and in your head you're going, but I already do that, okay? Well, I need to show
you
that's what I mean.
And that's why these new evaluations help. And the way they do it, and it's what Annette and Ellen have done, where they have this observer tab and everything, so they can actually show. I drop by and I counted it. And I think that's what we all need, and we need it for our board evaluation as well. We need to be having some things that we say, okay, did I go to all my meetings? If I didn't, you know, and do I go prepared? Do I do this? Do I do that? I think it's all of them. And going back to this book, one area that I found was interesting, we have the quality teachers, but did you find it interesting with parents? What they suggested, you know, Christy and I were the the PTA, and we did every party in their classroom and everything else. And we had an advantage because if any of our children were not doing well, we knew about it because we were in the classroom. But the book says, rather than, hey, I am the classic cheerleader mom, rah, 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 you're a great kid. But they say that the best, and I sat down with my kids and said, okay, what did a good coach do? I asked my son this. The coaches that really made a difference in your life. Because what does this book say? The coach knew my strengths and knew my weaknesses. Mm-hmm. The coach pushed me to be better. And the good
told me how.
Told me how. And the good coaches didn't demean me
right.
when I couldn't do it. The good coaches let me fail sometimes and learn, and they may have replayed what I did wrong 4 times at team films, but showed me what I was doing wrong and what I needed to do. And frankly, there were some times I wasn't able to do what the coach needed, and so somebody else went into the position.
That's the data I'm talking about. We're not just talking about numbers. What new teachers are being taught to do is to keep a portfolio. Here is the lesson plan, here is this, here is that, here is, you know, just a lot of things that they do. You know, I record this on my website. One of the things that happened that you just said a while ago was that we had a teacher at Logan High School who kept getting passed by. He was a 3/4-time teacher, or he or she, and an opening kept coming up for a full-time position in that person's area, and the person kept passing by. And so the person filed a grievance. And so I go in with the UNICEF director and the teacher and the principal, and you open up his file, and he walks on water. And so the question the teacher has is, oh, look at excellent evaluation. Like you said, okay, And so what the principal said to me afterwards, he says, well, I can't mark him down because then he would be mad, and then he would bring in his... AR rep, and I go, as well he should. You know what? If the person doesn't feel that the evaluation is fair, you're the principal. What's wrong with him coming in and saying to you, well, how come you marked me down here? Why should you be afraid of that question? But like you say, you know, that's so I said to him, you know, it's not, he said, well, you know, LEA won't let us do that. And you go, no, you do your job. You know, you and Anne and I talked about that earlier. It's just like, we don't say, you know, like I told you, here's the lesson plan. I don't want that person. And so, you know, 6 weeks lesson plan that big. But principal, do your job. But they also need the tool to do that job. That's an accurate measure. That.
But I don't really remember them discussing much of evaluation in other countries.
Except that there was rigor, and the best were the teachers.
But they didn't
say how it was done.
You knew as a teacher that was a profession, that this is what it's going to take if I'm going to get there. And it is. I mean, you know, our colleges, it's like, yeah, you know, come, we just want you to pay tuition, and so whoever wants to do this. And it was. And it's interesting, Finland, that was their focus, was on the teachers.
Teacher education.
Korea was on the student. You know, the pressure was on the student. And Finland, it said, when it came to happiness, Finland ranked second after Denmark in the 2012 World Happiness Report commissioned by the United Nations. The Finns had many reasons to be happy, including the fact that education increased income, income increased happiness. If you want the American dream, United Kingdom Labour Party leader Ed Miliband said at a social mobility conference in 2012, go to Finland. In the 21st century, it was easier for a poor person to get a great education in Finland than in almost any country in the world, including the United States.
And I highlighted that same page, which is funny when I read that, because I thought the part that said, to give our kids the kind of education they deserve, we have to first agree that rigor mattered most of all, that school existed to help kids think, to learn to think, to work hard, and yes, to fail. I mean, we really have, I mean, in Korea, I mean, and as I thought about it, because you know that everyone can't be in the top 10%. Even if they're all in the top 10%, there's still going to be, well, there's still going to be some that are failing, even though you're top, I mean,
and if they don't, they think they're a failure.
Yeah.
They knew what it felt like to fail, but
I'm
harder
like 90% of the other people, but I'm a failure because I'm not
at this yeah. end of the curve.
On one measurement of life, which is the test score.
Which is just crazy. Because they still would be highly successful, but someone has to fail. But they didn't teach their kids that it was okay.
When you talk about sports, I think that's a lot of the draw. Because you look at sports. They fail all the time.
Yeah.
You know, they don't get the first down. They don't get the touchdown.
They don't win the game.
They don't win the game. I mean, they're used to that, and they're used to going back and trying to improve. And it was interesting that the one girl that came from a foreign country, and she sat down and she said during a test, one of the girls raised her hand and she said the teacher actually came over and helped her during the test.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so instead of saying no, we're going to let you fail, and then like sports does too. Yeah, you fail, but you learn that failure is not a big deal. It will, by failing and winning and failing and winning, you'll eventually get where you want to be. What are we teaching, some of this that they bring in, we don't want any kids to ever feel like they're a failure, and so, we have to...
Everybody gets a trophy.
Yeah, those kind of things.
Everybody gets a trophy.
Yeah, and what does it do to the kids?
Oh, yes, everybody gets a trophy.
It makes them afraid to fail. It makes them feel like failure is a serious thing, whereas... kids are really involved in sports. It's like, I missed that job.
Here it is, right here. One thing was clear. You give our kids the kind of education they deserve. We first had to agree that rigor matters most of all. That schools existed to help kids to think, to work hard, and yes, to fail.
I just read that.
That was the core consensus. Yeah. that you've got to be able to fail. Yeah.
You get some of that, too, on page 230 and 231.
The teachers, too, I think, They realize on their evaluations that it's okay to fail. You get some negative things.
Yeah.
That's something to work on the next time. And somehow, like you say, you need to incorporate that somehow, kind of what we do with athletics in the United States, into the...
Isn't that something we talked about at Logan High? Is that ability, as we redo it, that kids have to have experiences where they... The experiential, because when you're experiential... It doesn't always work.
They don't get chosen. They have to sit on the bench. But one of the things they're taught, too, is that when you do fail, you're not going to sit around for 2 weeks and whine about it. You leave it on the field and you move on, because then you have the next chance. I'm so glad we hired you.
It's kind of interesting, too, because it didn't seem like to me that they have any kind of tier two or tier three instruction. It's like you can go the first time. If you don't get the first time, sucks to be you. Really, because they don't have that engagement. Okay, well, you didn't get it, so I'm gonna take the next step.
But you wonder,
it's like education was, their content was delivered. Next, it was very scripted.
Well, each one was different. I think when you looked at,
I guess in Korea.
Well, Korea,
yeah.
Their daily education wasn't that important.
Zero.
Yeah. It was all about the end of the night time. That's where they gained everything.
That was fascinating.
That's why they don't go to school.
Well, that's why they don't have sports, because all the kids are studying all night.
Yeah.
That's what I said. They miss the richness of life,
You want to
be engaged during the
day
in school so that, they can go play the games at night or be involved in all kinds of extracurricular activities and kind of gain that fullness of life. And I really feel bad for those kids in South
Korea. And the teacher.
Like you said, the police go say,
what was the one guy making, $4 million?
Yeah, because he was so good.
But he wasn't he was a teacher, but not in a public
school. He had his own. One of the things we stress here, about formative and summative evaluation, is that the thing is that they study, take a big test, that's it. But that check for understanding along the way. I looked at one of our teachers, and I see a student who I know really struggles just to even get his homework done and everything. But so I look at and I'm watching and I check their grades. Week after week, he has an A, because there is no formative assessment except 5 points because you were there and breathing. Okay? That's the wrong kind of phrase. And then they check the test, and he gets an F, of course, because there was no checking for any understanding. And now he has a D minus minus. And is that teaching?
Well, I think there's got to be the ability to I look at it from my point of view, which is an employer, if I had someone staying and not being able to cut it, I had the ability, after I'd worked with him, to just go in and say, I'm sorry, but you're not going to cut it as a baker, and I'm released. And unfortunately, the mindset is not that way in education. I mean, it's like after 3 years, you're there. And I think some, so you've got teachers that I think are there that are just there, I'm sorry, but for...
Don't be sorry.
Just for the money. I will go there. I will get my work done. As soon as it's done, I'm going home. And yet, you know, I go past, especially, you know, I go past the Wilson School all the day, all the time to go to my mother's. And you can see the same cars there that are there early, they're there late till night. You see them there off times during the summer. You see them on Saturday. And you see the dedication of teachers. And to me, I often think, now there's a teacher that ought to be given X amount of dollars more than this teacher that just goes and puts in their time and goes home
and
not putting the effort in.
They do it from the day they're hired to the day they retire. Instead of, we've seen some bright flames who eventually get tired of doing it, and it's, well, if I only do this many more, I can retire with full retirement. I love this quote. In reality, the Rhode Island teaching force was already far too white and far too female. That to become more diverse and attract more men in particular, it could be argued the profession needed to be more prestigious, not less. More to the point, more minority students needed highly educated and diverse teachers. It was interesting to note that higher standards were seen not as an investment in students, they were seen first and foremost as a threat to teachers. Somehow we have to balance that, and I think it's one of the things the legislature's trying to do on their own because they think we can't do it, but I'm hoping with our evaluation system, somehow we have to get it so that the rigor, and we see this as we try to reinvent schools, that rigor's important. We're not demeaning your teaching efforts. And one of the things we can say is our population is more diverse. We aren't teaching the top 75% of the entire United States. We have a broad spectrum, therefore we need to use different teaching methods and have more rigor for everyone, not just the AP kids. But I don't know how we do that.
Teachers need to be taught differentiated instruction, period. Differentiated assessment. One of the things that you, when you use the word evaluation, the thing that scares teachers when you start talking about performance pay, okay, as a special ed teacher, the progress that my students, if I were teaching in the resource classroom, the progress that my students make may be this much, but for another student, it would be this much, okay? And then when you take those kids that are severely multiply handicapped, what happens is that their progress, and that's what's so frustrating for their parents, is their progress is so small and so long, okay, before you get to that little thing. And so, you know, so that group of people always goes, well, I won't get any performance pay because my kids are not going to score high on the test. So the other part of it is that you think, okay, so the performance, okay, is going to be based upon an arbitrary or capricious or at least an arbitrary decision as to what is my performance. And so coming up with that evaluation system that I know our district works on, that the state works on, it has to be fair. It has to measure what it says it's measuring, as opposed to my going in and going, you know, I'm just pissed off with this person today, and you know what, so I'm going to mark you down. And we all know what happens in every field, whether it's in the bakery or whether it's in the banking business or a secretary or whatever. Policeman, you know, everybody gets, somebody runs into somebody who just
But I don't think you just go by just tests and stuff will happen.
Well, and that's what people hope does.
Well, it can't be. You know, I know there was a teacher at Logan High during the entire time that my kids went to school. Every single one of my kids said that was the most worthless class they ever took because they didn't learn nothing. It was just like the one that you got said you got papers, you filled these out, you worked on them during the week, Friday you take a test.
Right.
And it was boring. I heard it over and over and over again. And the individual had to be a good friend of mine. But at the same time, it was... The kids, I mean, these people, these young men and women know.
They do.
If it's a crappy teacher and they're not.
If the appendix, appendix to say that, the kids know who the good teachers are and that a good evaluation system, they did say that, has a student component to it.
I think it does.
I teach 16 and 17 year old class in Sunday school.
I can't hear you.
I said I teach the 16 and 17 year olds in Sunday school, and so you know they'll make just from the comments that they make, they all know, you know, where teachers are, the teachers of children are. I mean, it's just interesting that way.
And the thing is, and it usually aligns with rigor, whatever it is that teacher requires more. They're the favorites that don't make them.
If there's really good teachers that have. Really good teachers aren't necessarily the most popular.
Well, and you have I think though that you have teachers who demand rigor, but again, as we're looking for the superintendent, some of those kind of things, they don't have the people skills or the PR skills to really motivate those kids to do it. They just say, I had college professors like that just ticked you off. It's like, well, I had to work my way through school, so they just give you a bunch of work to do. You really didn't gain. I didn't feel like I gained much from it. It was just like, I had to work my tail off, and so you're going to work your tail off, and so here it is. And I'm like, that's not really motivating.
I'm not learning.
Yeah.
Am I learning?
Yeah, I want to learn things. And that's, I think, you know, you have teachers that have those PR skills to really demand a lot, but get the kids to do it. Whereas the others, that they just go, you know, yeah, I set the standards, but I don't really care anymore.
You have the reverse combination. I have a teacher friend. It was Mr. Worksheet, Mr. Used the same thing for 25 years or whatever, but he is his or her its personality is so cool, relates to the kids so well, has the neatest jokes, help you out, do you know whatever. Okay. Everybody loves the person, but it isn't teaching. And so you get that set too, where that teacher would be marked down as, one of my favorite teachers.
Well, I think that's where you need to align somehow the motivation. And money is a motivator. It's not the only motivator, but there is a motivational factor to that, I think. And, as I was thinking this, you know, the guy that made four million, I thought, what if every teacher had the opportunity to make $200,000 or $300,000 a year? I mean, just a paradigm shift and say, when they go to school that year, they have that opportunity. And it's like, whoa, wait a second, you know? I mean, obviously we can't, you know, with the budgets that we have, we can't pay them all that way, but what if? And one of the, you know, as we're getting into this testing where we're getting more, where they're able to show and test the growth and say, okay, it's not just about where you are, but we test in the beginning, and now we can measure through the year how far you've actually come. And so, I mean, to get $200,000 or $300,000, I'm gonna have to take a large, you know, large class, and I'm gonna have to take a lot of kids, and I'm gonna have to bring them from here to there. And actually, it's gonna be better for me if I can get kids that are on the lower end of that scale, because if I can really motivate these kids that are down here, you know, almost on the verge of resource, but and I can motivate them to just take off, that's gonna mean a lot more money for me. I mean, if we could add some of those things in there where there's some motivation for that, and then the other teachers, it's like, you're going to get your $35,000 a year, and that's really all you're going to get. If you're just the worksheet, you know, if you're just kind of passing time, then maybe you'll, you know, maybe you'll get some of that doc or whatever, but so one way or another, you're either in the mindset of, I'm showing up for work every day saying, you know what, we can just have miracles happen here and change people's lives, and I'm just on fire about that, and let's see how much we can. And, you know, part of the pay is reflected in that to say, because I look at it, I think, Who makes $200,000 to $300,000 a year? Doctors and lawyers, and I mean, are lawyers really more important to our society than
teachers?
That's what I'm saying. They're out there, and it's like, no, if you can change, you know, that many kids' lives and just inspire and for the rest of their life, isn't that worth more than, you know?
So Jeff, why would we keep the teacher who just comes in and does nothing?
Well, and I think
why would we keep them if they're not?
Yeah, no, I understand, but I think what would probably happen is the natural attrition. They would kind of just go, you know, I mean, I either ought to get everybody else around me is really
making
good money. They're doing well, they're successful, and I'm just kind of coasting here. And so maybe I either need to get on board or find something that really gets me excited.
Maybe I just like coasting.
Yeah, and there may be some that are like that, but I think in an environment where you're seeing everybody else advance and do really well, and you're just going, you know, I think they may say, and I, in some cases, you're still going to have to let some of them go, but I think the writing would be on the wall that it's like, I'm just not, it's just, because I think there are, I think there's a lot of teachers who would probably do better as bakers or bankers or something else, you know, they like it and get into it, but they kind of got in there, and now they've got their education behind them, and they're in the, you know, but I think if that was apparent that they could see, I've got a choice every year, basically. I can, if I really invest in these kids and take them places and inspire them and we get amazing results, that's going to come back to me. I think you, then all of a sudden you're going to attract people too that are saying, hey, there's some money to be made in there. There's a potential, that, you know.
You heard of the teacher that when the principals are going around doing their evaluations, okay, every school has something like this, okay. Is that, well, it's usually a high school, I guess, high school or middle school, mostly high school, is that the kids will say, oh, I'll be so glad when they're done evaluating him so that he can quit pretending that he's teaching us, because he doesn't do anything, you know, leaves the room, gone all the time, and so it's time for his evaluation. So on that day, you know, he has a formative, and then a summative. So on those days, the teacher shows up and does it, and the kids are like, we're not used to this. We're used to just kind of doing our
work. Well, that's when you have the students have the opportunity to be part of the evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was in that class, and that was happening. Mm-hmm. I said, the only day that Mr. X or Mrs. X does anything is the day you come in to evaluate. The rest of the time is pathetic.
Well, part of it is the funding the way that we fund. Because honestly, we're paying for the number of kids that are sitting in those seats for the number of days. And that's why if we advance them all too fast and they all graduate when they're juniors, we just lost a whole bunch of money. And so some of that from the legislature side, I think, really has to change, because really, it's tough to kind of create some of those things if that's the way our funding comes. And now we're going to hurt ourselves funding-wise. And so that's, I just, you know, I know the performance pay and some of those things are kind of touchy and everybody gets a little worried about that, but I think the legislature has to address that somehow and start to say, you know what, we need to do more than just pay for how long you sit in a seat. You know, I mean, we need to start looking at, what are we really paying for in education? Are we paying for that
performance pay
seat time? Or are we
just
paying to...
How much isn't just the testing, but it's all the things that you will do as a teacher. You have this whole set of, these are teacher things that you do. You differentiate instruction, differentiate assessment. You do your lessons plan, you have a website, kids have access, you communicate. You communicate in a timely fashion, you try and remediate, you do this, you do all of these teacher things. And then there's the testing part too.
Well, I think part of the problem with evaluation is it's all the principal that's evaluating them and all of those things. And I think there needs to be a piece like, you know, with students. I mean, health professors get
students. And that's part of the
new one, yeah.
Okay. And, you know, and the parents and the whole thing. I mean, you know.
Where is our ISQ from this year? FSI value thing?
They're having trouble getting the data back from the company.
Because it's now a company instead of the USU.
Yeah, I know. But
it's kind of hung up a bit.
We already have ours. I mean, they same thing.
Yeah.
Somebody said that it was so bad they weren't going to give it out.
No, Stacy, do you remember?
We haven't heard that. We just referred that.
I have. Okay, that gave me that.
But when I went in to look at it, some of the school's reports don't show up. So I went back to the company and said, I need the reports. I can't just use some of the schools. And so they're working to figure out how to pay for it.
Okay.
So that's what I'm.
And that's a problem when you go to a new company and you have multiple schools.
And, yeah. And that will be a conversation in the future whether we use IFQ again, just because it has kind of morphed
no longer
a bit from what we had intended it to be. So.
And I think it's more complicated than the one we used before. Mm-hmm. Like before, we just got a PDF report and you could just look through and view it all.
Yeah.
This one, you have to have a sign in, you go to the website, and then you have to look at it, and then you click on a report, you look at that and scroll through, then you click on the next report, scroll through.
I thought it was very easy as a teacher at Interface and doing the same thing. It was like, oh, I like this. Much.
I thought it was kind of odd as a parent. You could take it multiple times. You could take that thing as much as you want.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. I'm hearing, coming out of this, a couple of things that are probably things we'd like to try to work on.
Yes, that's what I was just going
to
go for.
And one would be to make sure that the assessments we're using are in fact assessing what we want assessed.
Okay.
And we've not really looked at the new assessment. As a board, we've never seen the assessment, what it is, what it involves, how much. And so we need to know.
Are you talking like end of level?
Stage.
Well,
yeah.
They've got drop in, but we don't know what drop in assessments look like.
Oh, you mean the observer tab stuff?
Talk about observer tab, but we don't know what an observer tab is.
Are we talking about evaluation, teacher evaluations, or student assessments?
No, we're talking about teacher evaluation.
Oh, evaluation. Okay.
We need to know how that's being done, and if it's doing what we at least believe ought to be occurring in each school.
Have you seen the observer tab at all? Have you been through?
No, we haven't. We don't know.
Because I've seen some of it. I mean,
well, we've talked a little bit about the assessment, but we've not really seen that the whole package.
We had the initial conversation about it, but not with
that. That was it.
Yeah.
But literally in a half an hour to an hour, if you had somebody come in, they could walk you through.
That's right. We'd like to see that because we haven't.
That would be worthwhile.
Okay.
The second piece was with the new pay schedule. It might be possible to build in another step in there for people who can demonstrate excellence. You have to look at the budget to see if that's possible. Could I move somebody up a step?
Yeah.
Not an increment.
What would be the easiest there would be if the legislation, you know how they gave the salary adjustment money?
The 1500 and...
Well, 1725. Yeah. So 4200 and it's just completely separate. It would be nice if they would have a significant amount to that and then just kind of take the whole piece and say, okay, the 4200 now is at risk based on your performance. So if you don't perform up to standard, then you could lose that 4200. But here's another 4200 that, or 5000 or whatever, that you get in a bonus now if you exceed a certain point or something like that. So it kind of gives give them all, and you think $5,000 really isn't a lot of money.
What is with
budget? To a teacher it is, because that's a part-time job, not something else. I mean, you know, they're going to make what they're going to make. And so to increase their income, it's not like other business and stuff where you can do that and do more
overtime.
And so it gives them, it's like, well, I can either get a part-time job if I need to bring extra money, or I can focus on being a better teacher and get that extra money. And so even though it's not a lot, I really think if the legislature would send something like that. And
if you offer them $100, they'll come for the $100 because they don't have any money.
Yeah.
No extra money.
In Logan, I've mentioned this $4,200, and everybody acts like they don't know what it is. I know the school I'm at right now is that the evaluations had to all be done. I had a deadline for mine so the principal could put everything together and determine whether or not they got that $4,200, because if you did not pass the evaluation as effective, then no, you would not get that amount, or it would be reduced. Our Logan teachers get that?
It's kept separately. It's separate, but I don't know that it's
evaluators.
It, it, no, it, well,
But the teachers, there was that money that they allocated, and Marshall has kept out separate because it was, there's the 1700 plus the this, and
right.
And so Marshall has always kept it separate because it's accounted for differently with the legislature than the others, right? Jeff, isn't there a different accounting method or something?
Well, how do the teachers know if they get it?
Well,
most of them, it just comes in their salary. And
yeah.
But all you'll know, if I'm going to have to look at
it. So we don't get it until the end of the year.
No, they get the salary. It just comes in your salary. Now, most
of them,
if they kept it separate, then
it
shows up.
Yeah.
You know, on your advice of deposit, it should show up that, oh, you know, you're getting this much for your regular salary, this much, about $350 a month. But it's on a separate line item. It should be on their advice.
Yeah, I won't get mine yet. I will not get it until my June paycheck.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
how
we do it.
Dependent
on
my evaluation.
Wow.
Yeah.
But that's not how we do it in Pioneer. I assume you probably don't do it here either. I mean.
No, we don't.
I don't.
But that's, think so. That's the, my understanding was the legislature with this new evaluation system was kind of going in that direction saying,
I thought they did too.
They haven't done it yet, to my knowledge, but it's kind
of. But they get really small schools.
Down the road, like, once this gets in place, we kind of want to use
but
that
money. But I thought
money
we had a pot of money that for our administrators, because I thought it had to be divided up between all administrators, and so they only got like, because the administrator pilot rolled out last year.
Right,
and
they get a cost of living.
They get a, not a cost of living, but they get a stipend based on what their evaluation is, but it's like 1% of their salary.
Yeah, it's really.
Yeah, I saw something like that on the show, because I'm going to have to ask Zane.
Yeah, we might have to
have
some. First,
like
this is the first year for administration, and I don't think they know how to, that's one of the things that's still out there with teacher evaluation. Sounds like your school's been able to do it. But
it's a small school. I mean, you know, it doesn't have as many people, so it's easy to like you say, roll it out. And yeah, this is the.
Anyway, I think those are the two things we need to really focus on. Trying to see, tighten up that evaluation so we know what it is and see if we can make some suggestions of perhaps student input to that and or parent input to that that maybe is not right now being considered.
Yeah.
And then to work on figuring out a way to put in an incentive for performance based or goals or something that a teacher can look to work toward.
It was also so important just teacher.
What if we took, I'm just saying as a board, that $400,000, what if we said $100,000, I'm just throwing a figure out, and you set some criteria here, if this is what you achieve, here's, we will give you, like you said, $5,000. I mean, if you set aside $100,000 for that, I mean, to me, if we're talking about that, what a great way. If I was a teacher, like you said, and I had the opportunity to
especially
get this
up front, this is what you must do.
Yeah.
It's not just receive this, but it's by observations that we're looking for this on this
I think the results of what
this.
The from
it
the beginning
like
to the end of the
red.
Thing. But you know they've got
to
show
something you have to have
yeah, it would be nice if that comes as kind of an extra end of the year bonus. $1,000, suddenly I'm going,
and some people
wow, I got $1,000 in my pocket that I didn't have. I can take that $1,000 and go buy a new boat or motor or
you can get a scooter or
something.
Or shoes.
Yeah.
I want a lollipop. I think, but I've got just money that I can have. That
and I do think it would have to be tied in, you know, like you say, with the evaluation, but I think also on the class that you have. Where did they end up from beginning to end? You know, like we had those ones, that second grade, whatever it was, you know, and you see a couple of them,
down.
Hear their way up. Well, shouldn't that teacher get a lecture, the one that went down? Now, I realize, you know, and some are going to say, you know, I had class, and I had all these bad ones, and I had this and that. But still, it's going to even out some over the thing.
Okay, just to play devil's advocate.
You always do that. Just stop it.
Yeah, because you're
really
going to do it, and then you said you would act like this, and everybody would think we were about it. Okay, so we're not. Anyhow, to play devil's advocate, if you if I have kids in my classroom, okay, when we consider socioeconomic areas, okay, they don't have a place to study, they don't have books, they don't have magazines, their mom is a coke addict, and they go home, and they don't have any kind of support there, and I can't control for those variables.
Okay, but am I going to be more inclined to find something out for each one of those variables?
How can I know there's a box?
I'm just saying, Connie, I think personally, I would be looking at every avenue I could possibly come more focused on that than I would if it was just
nothing.
I really think that you would.
But it
you
has
would
to be
do
something
extra.
That I can control for. As
well, I don't.
Well, because you do have control. If I've got a kid who's not attending school, not doing things, I as a teacher can make a phone call. I as a teacher can do something to get the kid to school.
You call DFS.
That's right. I get somebody here, and I say, okay, now that piece, that went up. And I can measure that. And I can measure, okay, this kid did not do any problems in math this week. I'm going to make sure he does.
But can you measure that, you know, that, okay, I did this, I did this, I did this, I did this, I did this. The mother is still on coke, the dad is still in jail. And the student, DFS came in and they can't get the kid to school.
Okay,
but the
digital
score shouldn't go down.
I mean, when I get credit for all that effort.
I still maintain that this kid, with that incentive there, you're going to do something beyond what you normally would do.
That's what I'm saying, but if I do it and it doesn't work,
then it's going to show up some way on that kid.
Well, if I show that I can do that or I tried all of that,
Well,
that's up to us to figure out.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying,
devil's
advocate.
No, but that absolutely needs to be addressed. But on the other side of that, we've all heard the stories of a teacher who inspired a kid like that that just took off.
Right,
yeah.
He goes on the internet.
And he still had the same family power and everything. But we all have, and that's what I say. If you've got several of those kids, yeah, maybe your efforts on some of them don't work, but the one that does is enough that's going to balance out. And again, you know, we're never going to get a perfect measurement. And money's not the only motivator. But it seems to me, rather than keep putting everything into just more money, to say, wait a second, we all recognize that there are teachers that are really doing it above and beyond and inspiring kids, and they're the kind of teachers that we would like to have in every class, and there's other teachers that are coasting it. So somehow there's got to be a differential to say.
But there's that one aspect, because I can personally show you where I have worked my tail off for a student who is in a dire situation and nobody in the family cares, okay? So I call, I do this, I bring them in, I try this. We've done all of these things, and they're documented. And it's like, stay to school at 7 o'clock working on this or that with them. You know, bring them in at 8 o'clock in the morning. Pull them out of a tutorial class and make those phone calls, send those letters home, and prove that you worked your butt off to get that boy, and somehow you just didn't. Well, maybe you got the other one, okay?
Well,
but somehow you just didn't get him. But that effort needs to be.
Well, I think that effort is going to show up in the teacher or in the evaluation by the principal.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Well,
sometimes,
and that's why you have different pieces that add into it. Because, if you don't succeed in, we don't do it just based on the test scores and the growth in between. But we take that evaluation, and that principal then has the opportunity to say, this teacher goes above and beyond, they're doing this and this and this and this, and so that would be enough to bump you up, even if the kids didn't quite make it.
You know, something that is so important, you know, is that when you talk about evaluating your bakers, is when, I'll hurry up on this one, it's like, I have to have confidence that my principal, or the person who is evaluating me, does know curriculum and instruction, and knows good instruction from bad instruction and all that. Is that there are times, like I will say to myself, okay, on this issue I'm listening to Jim, okay? When I like to consider, I'm not as much a data person as Jim is, but I am a data person. And so when we start talking about data stuff and something where there's, I find myself listening to Jim because I know where he comes from, I know where his area of expertise is and everything. And so I have a lot of trust in what is going to come out of his mouth, okay? And it's the same thing, everybody has their area. Okay, but if I don't believe that my, and we've had that before, we have principals who the teachers just go, they would know the teacher from the bad teacher.
Well, I think that's why,
Marshall's responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think, no, and I think that's why it would be very helpful for you guys to be trained on ObserverTel. Because ObserverTel has those in there. They literally count the number of
interactions
and the different techniques that the teacher's using. And I mean, they go through and they count it, you know. And so it really, at least from what I've seen of it, it gives it more of an objective rather than a subjective thing. I mean, it's like, I popped into your class, you didn't know I was coming, and I noticed that you had eye contact with the kids this many times, or you had, you know, interaction, you know, the kids were raising their hands, talking. I mean, there's a whole list of things that they choose from, and they count the number of times while they're sitting there that those kind of things go on. And so, and all those things have been taken with what are the...
See, that's what I do when
standards.
I go into
a So ObserverTel really helps whether you know that or not. I think I could walk in with ObserverTel and be able to, I mean, I've never taught in the classroom, but I could give a pretty good evaluation just based on
that's good
that list of what, just because they put all that together in ObserverTel to make it easy for them to go in and evaluate. How many times does this happen? What kind of things?
And the teachers know that's what they're going to be evaluated on. And that's what's important. That's what's important, that I know as an educator that this is my supervisor. My supervisor is going to come in and grade me on these areas.
But it'd be nice for us to see that because, we go around to visit schools and stuff, maybe we're only in there for 10 minutes. It'd be kind of fun to just have that and just say
you can have ObserverTel on your iPad and you can just for your own purposes just kind of evaluate.
And I think it has a component where the teacher accepts before it's posted that the teacher has to indeed say that's exactly what, so that the teacher
the principal
just can't arbitrarily put something on there that's not appropriate if indeed it wasn't.
When Deb Cheney was special ed director, she would come in and she would always do a praise count. Because there is an expectation of how many times you will say, good job, not good job, but hey, you've got it. I think you guys are listening or whatever. And there was a certain number of times expected, say, in a 15-minute period. Unfortunately, what she would do is she would wear the timer, and as soon as she would click the timer, I would know she was timing me, and boy, did my rate of reinforcement go up. Hawthorne, that's it. Yeah, Hawthorne was faster.
I just thought maybe we should add one more thing, that I got from this is that the parent component, which was the most important thing that a parent could do, is to reach their children.
Read and show the value of education, and that I'm reading something else, and talk about what you're reading.
But I think that as a school board,
not just reading, talking about what you've read.
Right, but I think that we can start promoting a little bit more. Because we had that Read to Me campaign going for quite a while, that maybe we should start, dragging that up a bit more and really promoting, especially since we have such a diverse population, that really reading to your children at a young age would be the single most thing that you could do and we have the Hispanic population that doesn't come to our schools as frequently, but they can read to their children at home, even if it's in their native language. They don't have to do it in English. But I think that we should probably really try hard to work on reading with your children.
Yeah, and not only reading with your children, but your children, is that your children seeing you reading, and that you value reading. And what's interesting, the same thing that has been shown to keep kids off drugs is dinner conversation. Talking about how was your day, what did you learn, and the value of education. And as parents model that, and those are some parenting skills that I know are out, like our Read to Me and some of those. And if we could, I'll bet there's some service we could bite into or use their little blurbs
that we either put on our website or as we do these parent link things, yeah. that it could go out. Remember, dinner conversation, say kids this way or whatever. If we could have some of those little reminders, it's more important than coming and volunteering in your child's classroom.
You know, and I have one student that what their parents do, his mom, they do this. If his grades fall, he's not allowed to eat dinner with them. He has to go down to his room. And that's what you say to yourself, are you kidding me? That's when I want that kid at that table.
Mm-hmm. Very much
where
so.
Did they get the idea that that was...
Yeah, and parents are a key part of education because we can't control it, but if we can help parents that way, and those are the areas that I have my markers and some of those things in because it's this next generation.
One of the things that a lot of teachers do, and I will tell you, I've done it myself a few times, and we always put ourselves at risk of, don't tell me how to raise my child, is that you establish those relationships, and then you say, you know, personally, if you don't mind my saying, however you want to say it, Joe, you just tell them. I think that it would be better if CJ were to be at the table with you when his grades go down so that you can... talk about it.
Do we feel like that we've adequately covered the smart kids in the world book?
We can mark it off.
We have three things that we're on the board. We will talk to Marshall about.
Well, now, did you want to talk to Marshall about exploring maybe possibly some
yes.
this money, some incentives, some kind of stuff or something, you know, that we can part of us and say, is there something that we could come up with, that, you know, even if it's small?
And the only thing we really control is that levy.
Yeah. And we can, maybe when we find out what's happening with negotiations, we'll know for sure exactly. But Jim and I
well, you know, you yet. Could look at it and we could start looking at it and get it ready for the following year. Because it's a little too hard to probably implement it this fall.
Well,
but
the only problem is we don't want to take anything away.
Correct.
And because, you know, that's always the
what
case. If you have money, you take it away.
You want to take it away.
We want to make sure we, whatever we're going to do, kind of
isn't that a cost
pay you a little bit of money so that we have some
discretionary
money that we can then say, now next year we can do something with it. year, but maybe we ought to take, you know, $50,000, you know, just saying, let's set that aside and kind of see how to use that.
Well,
can
that could work, especially because you don't know how many people can actually. Generally saying, yeah, this first year, let's have a little bit of a cushion so that if they exceed our expectations, 90% of them go, then we'll be able to fund that kind of a thing, and then going forward,
well, yeah, but then we tried to get up by it. Because it was
I don't know, like, you know,
it's
a lot of major problem. You know what the teachers have to do with it.
It really was.
In the law and in the talk. And there's others
and
that
have been smart.
It's
really
wonderful.
You're right. So my English education
costs
just as much as your
science.
Yeah,
for a good teacher, that's more of a
but the market doesn't say that.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I know.
Not that I'm going to change.
Yeah.
I've
got the kids that
know
that.
They're aware.
But then the teachers who don't do it go,
well, the other thing is we look at other, you know, other school districts and charter schools and everything else that are out looking to try to get our best teachers to come to them, you know, if there is a little incentive, like, you know, well, you know, I get my salary, but I also get an extra $1,000 or whatever it is,
Christine,
you know, at the end of the year.
Or
Minister
kind
of a teacher. And
do Jeff and Marshall have to pass all these things?
Yep, they do.
Yep.
Okay.
And one of my questions on that.
All right, and we're going to pass this book off, and then we'll start a new reading as soon as we figure out. So if you have any suggestions, that's fantastic.
But one of my questions, Christy, is in here, I have a hard time seeing how much we have to read. You know, because when I can mark a couple of them or I can mark a bunch of them, and it doesn't really say you need to read this many books. It tells you you should, but it doesn't really register when you've done enough and when you haven't.
Yeah, two really good a book that I read last year, and we did it as a whole school. It's called You Cannot Teach What You Don't Know. But what it deals with is it deals with diversity, and it's all about being
in a diverse community, schools teaching diversity. It was really good. And it's like, you know, it sometimes will ask you to put yourself in the place of those kids in 1957 walking down the street and the mothers yelling and screaming at them because they were black and they were going to go to that white school. It's a really good book. And then there's a really good one too called Lies My Teacher Told Me, a history book. That's interesting. It just clarifies a lot of stuff. And then there's a book that's called Stupid White Man. Sorry. Jeff, have you ever... It's called... I am so sorry because it makes me laugh. It's by Michael Moore, which should tell you what it is.
Okay.
But yeah, it just goes through, and he did it a long time ago, but it goes through and talks about how all these decisions throughout history, you know, made. And so... I can remember when Richard Jensen was the superintendent and we all were supposed to be reading, and so on our doors it said, Mrs. Morgan is reading, and all these people are reading, and I did not dare put stupid white.
Okay. And so I marked my smartest kids in the world, but I don't know if it changed my thing or not.
That one about the vision is really good.
And if you look on... And we don't have to do that right now, but under community engagement and collaborative relationship, what Marshall Knight and James thought about is that we would do, like we talked about yesterday, and because it says other, and that's where we thought we would put our thank you cards under that category.
Good idea.
So what we're going to do today is, and I have a little list right here. And this isn't, once again, isn't because you, I mean, and you may look through the list and be able to see, oh, yeah, perfect, I'm going to send one to that person, or I'm going to send one to this person.
So I'm going to put other is recognizing staff.
Yep.
Staff recognition is probably the best way to put it.
Mm-hmm. So this is, these lists right here are district office, and then we have,
what do we go to, Jen, do you know?
No.
What does they do with those two?
This is all the staff right here.
To put on marker staff.
Oh, now, is that online? So we're going to, or is that something put on your
This is Power Up.
On
USDA.
And this is the area that we have the least marks at conducting what counts in event in the district. I don't know. Yeah, we're going to do that this fall.
And then we'll do the two committee council meetings and then this one.
Okay.
Just a second, okay.
Okay, so right now we're going to write each write as many thank you cards.
School
as we can.
Community council.
Two city council meetings.
School
first.
Community council. Not we've already done city council ones, and that's on a different one
pick
that we
person.
Said the first out
except
of the year.
We shouldn't send the same.
Yeah.
So when you choose someone, then just initial right by it.
Do we keep those?
No, we'll keep. I'll keep. Stacy said she'd keep them, and she'll keep track of it for us. Who's been sent
them
a card?
Send me there.
So, if I'm out and around and I see, I witness something and I want to send them a thank you note, I need to call and let Stacy know.
No, you just take one of these cards and send it to them.
Well, you said you're going to mark it off who we
well,
do
just
so.
The
mo- How is
just
she going to know?
Well, no, because that would be like above and beyond. I mean, because what this is that we just want to make sure everybody gets something. So if you're out and about and you want to send something because you noticed something.
Yeah, but what over the next little while?
We don't have a problem if they get more than one. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Or you can call Stacy and tell her.
Well, yeah. I'm just saying, you know, if we're interested in individuals, everyone getting one. I mean, there's been some that I've had interactions with the some of the cooks and stuff that I've been in. And I would, you know, that I've seen them do things or when I'm in there, because I always drop in because I helped them at one time. And I just stop in to see if you need any recipes or something like that, you know. And jokes right. when I see them. So that's what I'm saying, which it makes it, I'm just saying it's a whole lot easier for me to write a thank you note when I have,
I agree.
Seen somebody do something, I've been in there with them, I've had some association with.
Okay, but I think
that's
that
what
if you looked at this list right now,
yeah.
you could look at this list and send a thank you card.
Because that's the other thing. It's like you brush your teeth after you eat.
I can look at
the thank you note after I see you do something.
I can look at this list right now on the first page and send a thank you card.
Oh, I can.
It's okay.
So, question. How are we going to mail them since we don't have addresses? So we just get them in
the envelope and she's going to address them on.
So she's going to.
District office.
Yeah.
And this is staff.
Okay. So, can we just take some? Can you pass them around?
Yes.
Will you give me Bridger?
They're all in here.
Okay, do we need to tell you who we're taking?
Yeah.
Well, we actually could still fit Robin Williams one.
Yeah.
So, okay, I haven't been on the site for a while, and I can't sign in. What am I doing wrong?
Your
first initial and your last name.
Right.
First
so
initial.
C. Morgan.
It is. I have.
And then you need to figure out what your password is.
C. Morgan.
So are you going to give us some cards? Or
oh, sorry. I was starting to write mine. I want to get out of here. Jeff.
Did you?
Write? I don't know if you know. Yeah, you could send some. Write one to. Say my name's Jeff.
Madam,
I'm the district new business administrator, and I look forward to getting to know you. Yes?
Madam President, I would like to do mine for homework.
That's fine.
Thank you, Mommy.
I'm going to do mine here just so I get them done.
I'm just going to.
Do we need to tell you who we're doing?
Quiet board meeting.
Do we need to tell you who we're doing?
Yeah.
They're doing a whole lot. Sounds like we need some things stirred up.
Okay, Chris, stand in. So, does it take 4 years to learn how to do this?
Oh, it's a little plastic. Yes, it is. I'm touched.
I go to, what do I go to? And leaderboard? No.
It's, I don't know what it is.
People leaderboard about, welcome to?
It is.
Profile. Okay, it says customize, take a look, get trained. I'm already on it. Okay.
Done.
Do we need to say who we're sending it to?
Yes.
Somebody crossed off Deb Nathan. Oh, because she's not here anymore?
Yeah, but you can still
do it. Okay. So where did Claire Anderson go?
I'm not sure where he's going. He took an absence.
Comfortable.
So this is an example of another case I found. I don't know if this one might be more appealing or not. The keyboard has magnetic attachments. So when it stores, you just put it all the way in and then pull the whole thing shut. And that's how it packages up.
Just put that thing on the
end.
And
how
do you prop it up when you
prop it? I'll show you in a second. The protection around iPad's complete, so it's all the way around plastic, which doesn't 100% guarantee, but it's better than not having the edges covered. And then when you want to prop it up, you set it to the length you want by just moving the keyboard out as far as you want to prop it up. So the magnets hold it in place off the metal plate in here. And so if you...
Plus you can clean it better.
Yes, you can.
Because you can take it out.
You can. So...
Can you charge it while it's all together? I had one of those that you had to pull the keyboard out.
There is a separate cord for the keyboard to charge it with a out to USB like they usually are. And I don't know how good the battery life these keyboards have. But
what brand is it?
This is a... Verbatim.
Okay, I've had some Verbatim stuff. I have an external Verbatim drive that we've had for 12 years that still works.
Well,
I sent Deanna a very nice letter.
Anything else that's
about a week and a half ago.
Size. You may as well have a laptop if you can go on.
And I did get a nice response back from her.
Right. I don't know if you guys. I'll pass this around, let you look at it, and then if you're interested, we could order some of these, or we could get some like you've got there, and not yours, the one Marshall had yesterday. And Peter, did you sync your iPad last night? Okay, that's all right. We'll get back to you on that. And let me steal, did you bring in the...
I didn't bring my new one.
All right. Let's see how you guys are.
Well, just because
fine.
It was okay. What do I take with me today? And you said we were going to do ours on a separate day.
And we will.
About the other. So
we will. We have Microsoft accounts set up for all of you now. But I can't set them up on your iPads until we sync your iPads and get them transferred over.
Okay, you've done that, Mike.
Yeah. So... We'll I'll need to do that with Christy and Lynn. We've got Matt set up to take care of yours, so yours will all be ready to go when you get back from your trip. And then I'll just need to work with the rest of you individually as we go along here. Marshall ran away from us?
He didn't come today.
He didn't come at all today?
We excused him.
Huh. I see how you are. Everything okay with Marshall?
Oh, it's his wife's birthday. Oh. And we were doing, figuring out how to do the superintendent's lunch, so.
I should know these things. It's superintendent's wife's birthday.
All right, it is now 3:15, and we have conducted our board meeting today. It's June 3rd, and we are just going to finish up writing our notes, and then we'll be done. So.
Maybe there are the empty envelopes. They're going to be surprised that it wasn't in it.
Yep, they are.